And welcome to Nerds on Hip Hop. This podcast is about the intersection of hip hop and nerd life. Batwing, Paper Girls, Schoolboy Q, and Guru are all fair game. And if you know any of these names, welcome.
There are four main parts. We first review our weeks in nerddom and hip hopdom. Then we explore a theme through our hip hop and nerd influences. At the end, we ask ourselves a question and also open up to your questions.
Welcome again to Nerds on Hip Hop. I'm the Wolves Den, and I'm here with the legendary co-host, Miss Old School.
Victoria, aka Miss Old School.
The oldest of schools.
The very oldest of schools, but not that old.
She's like 50.
Allegedly. Alternative facts.
You know what? I'm just going to make a quick detour, because I feel like in this current climate, something needs to be said. We do a podcast about the intersection of nerddom and hip-hop-dom, and the key thing has just always been kind of being a place for people that don't necessarily get represented or trying to capture stories that don't get there. And I think in light of what's happened over this weekend, I think it's just important for us to kind of be advocates of ourselves, of like, we don't... With what happened, was like, we're not with what obviously has happened this weekend. And there are many different ways to think about what your role is. But I guess off the top of the dome, I just think, like, for any of us, anybody who's listening, to try to think actively of what it is that you can do in this scenario. But...
I completely agree. I mean, and even if it's just... Or not just, but even if it's just... It's... going, following your dream. Like, I read a tweet earlier that said something like, the woman who was in Star Trek, she inspired Martin Luther King to, like, keep going because he saw, like, oh, like, we got to Star Trek. Like, we have a black woman in space, more or less. Like, we can do that. And she was, you know, I'm sure an activist herself, but also just following her dreams of being an actress. So sometimes that can be it, too.
They say success is the greatest revenge, right?
Yep.
So, there are different ways. It's just, given this kind of Nerds on Hip Hop platform, it feels like just kind of semi-important to make a reference to that.
Completely agree. But anyway, but back to our regularly scheduled program.
So, I'll go over my week in nerddom first. Mm-hmm. I've been playing Dragon Quest V. And it has been by far the most charming game ever that I've played.
Charming.
Like, I have not laughed and smiled so much at what I'm looking at. Like, other games give me joy and I'm having fun. But I haven't just been, like, uncontrollably smiling like this before. And I think part of it is that this game captures what it's really like to be a kid. Like, I've played Earthbound, and Earthbound is kind of notorious for, like, oh, that getting people in the feels of, like, oh, what it's like to be a kid again. But Earthbound is nice, and it's charming, but it's not this charming. So there's this point, and there are a couple of moments, like, in the first 2 hours of the game, where just, like, I can't even imagine what that was like. Of, like, it brought me back to being a kid. So you walk... One of the classic moments is that you walk into a house and you're with your parent. And then there's a child your age, her name is Bianca, and she comes to you and she's like, "Parent talk is boring, right?" And the option you have is yes. And then you follow her. And it's like, I don't know if you remember being a kid and like, especially if, like, before the ages of 5 or, like, around 5, where it's, like, seeing another kid was, like, a gold mine to not be stuck in parent talk.
Instant friendship.
Right. And that's literally what happens. Bianca becomes, like, your party member for a little bit. And I remember there's that. There's a moment in time where when you start walking around the overworld and start doing, like, random encounters, it's because it's an RPG.
Right.
You can barely do any damage because you're, like, a kid.
Right, I was wondering, because I'm like, how much fighting can you actually do? You're, like, 5.
Right. but you're walking with your father, and your father's just like destroying everything as you're walking.
Like a shining light coming on him at all times. Like, ah.
Yeah, so like he's just one-shotting every creature you see. So it's actually like, so when you actually get to like, there's a moment in time where you kind of like get away from your father and kind of have your own adventure. And he's just like, I'm grinding, because he's like, you can't do the same thing that your father was doing a while ago. It was, and there's this other moment where I, like, think back to when you played Pokemon. You tried to look at everything. So you look at the signs, you try to do all of that, right?
Right, yeah.
Can you imagine when you're a five-year-old, what happens when you look at the sign?
Wait, you can't, can you read it?
No, they literally tell you, this appears to say something, but Marcus is too young to read it.
Oh, that's adorable. It's so sad.
I haven't, like, that's what, like, I've never, like, the small details that they add to make you feel like a kid. It's been the most, like, this is why I was like, I don't think I've played a game with that much charm.
Do you grow up in the game?
So, I haven't gotten far enough, but I know that's what's supposed to happen. So, I'm...
Okay.
At the bare minimum, you at least grow to be your father's age, and then there's supposed to be more story after that, but I don't know the full thing after that.
So, you eventually can read those signs.
Yes.
I imagine. Like, I feel like that's so cool, but at the same time, like, that's gonna be a headache to go back to all those signs. Like, what did I miss? But that sounds like so much fun. That's cool. Well, I've been having kind of fun, too, but I've been, I finally got to read Mori the Witch, which is a comic book by an artist named Skimlines. It follows woman named Mori, who is a witch, and her, like, I guess they haven't really explained, like, the person she's traveling with, but it's like a younger girl who's a beast of some sort. Don't know who, why, what's her story, but just like very young and impressionable, and Mori's like debating whether or not she should teach her how to be a witch or not, or like let her to grow up and just be like normal. But it's just so cute. Like, it's a really cute story. It reminds me a lot of this 90s anime called Ruin Explorers. Where,
why is it?
I think just partially because of the personality dynamic, where you have like this one person who's kind of strict, but like an older person who's strict, but also like you can tell they kind of have a soft spot for this like person they're traveling with, and then the second person's a little bit more like carefree and silly and just very, like, happy-go-lucky, and then they're both traveling together, which is really cool.
Like the Braveheart comic that you always send me.
Like the Braveheart comic.
Maybe not that, no, not that cut and dry. Like, they're a little more, they're more dimensional than the Braveheart. And that's the other cool thing, I think, that's about the comic, because, like, there's only 4 issues out right now, and the issues are pretty short, but I feel like they've introduced at least 4 characters, and they all feel like, I feel like I have a feel for each of these characters so far. Like, there's a character you meet at the end called Freya, and just from the main character's name is Mori, and she's kind of, like, lukewarm with everyone else, but when she talks about Freya, she just, like, lights up, and she's like, oh yeah, she's awesome, and already you're like, she must be awesome, because Mori didn't like anybody, you know? Except for her companion, the girl she's going around with. So, just, like, little things like that. And then when you meet Freya, she's like, oh my gosh, she's so adorable and so nice. And the art is so good, too. Like, it's just, it's very, not exactly manga art that I've seen before. But similar, maybe I would say. But just gorgeous, gorgeous art. And then it doesn't hurt that, I don't know if anyone's heard in previous podcasts that I have a certain affinity for characters with purple hair. Rose from Street Fighter, technically Kamina and Simone from Gurren Lagann. Semi. Bluish purple. They count, though.
You like Anthe.
Who?
Anthony from Revolutionary Girl Lieutenant YouTube.
I do like Anthony, yes. So yeah. Yeah, so that's a thing. So in all the witches in the story so far, they all have purple hair, so I'm really enjoying that too. Which is weird.
So,
but yeah, it's so cute.
What is there like a favorite art moment, since you seem like you really appreciate that? Is like any panels that stick out to your mind?
I really love the close up shots I do sometimes, like when the characters are showing a lot of emotions. There's one where, I don't want to ruin it, but Freya kind of like is scared out of her mind for some reason, and you're not sure why, but her face just like has this really nice mixture of like scared, but also like this, it in a way where it's almost funny because like her face is just like, oh, I'm scared. And you're like, I don't know. It was just like a really good way to show emotion. Yeah. It's really pretty, in general. Purple hair.
And those aren't the only things that we experienced. We actually hung out together again in person for the first time in like about a month or so.
Yeah. It was earlier this month, actually.
Wow, 2017's already gone.
Basically, it's 2018 already. Keep it moving. Just keep it moving.
Yeah, and I actually got to treat you to what you've been trying to marathon for like the last 10 years.
15.
So we saw One Piece Gold. Again, if you've been listening to this podcast, you may or may not know that I've been watching One Piece for what seems like forever. I'm somewhere in the 500s. But I decided to see One Piece Gold because I heard that a lot of them are not canon. It didn't seem like it would ruin a lot for me. And one major thing that happened in this one was already ruined for me was about Sabo, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and I, besides obviously like, oh, let's go do something fun, it was also, I've had kind of a previous experience with One Piece, I think I told you. Shoutouts to our friends over at the Two Belts podcast. Carlos over there lent me the first 20 volumes of One Piece, so I have a little bit of knowledge.
Nice. The manga?
Yeah. I have a little bit of knowledge, but I never really took to One Piece. So I was like, you're already 500 episodes in, so maybe this will convince me that it's worth going through this painful, long process. And I'm not sure if it really did that for me.
I don't, you know, I think One Piece Gold was a very fun movie, but I don't think it's has enough to convince someone to watch One Piece. There were some aspects I didn't like of it. I remember, I didn't really like how they portrayed Luffy. You don't really get to see Zoro a lot. Like, Luffy's kind of seen, I think he's not as charming as I usually find him, or as, like, he has a little bit more charisma, I think, in the show. In this one, he kind of just, I don't know, he seemed a little off. But it could have been because we watched it in English, and that was a thing.
But I didn't like the voice acting at all. I thought the voice acting worked.
The voice acting bothered me.
It really did?
It did. I mean, I got used to it after a little bit, but it wasn't the same. It wasn't the same.
I think the thing with Luffy, like, so the big problem with One Piece Gold for me is that I didn't love anybody who was going to be a part of the cast for the long period of time. So I didn't love Luffy because they, like, he was just too aloof, pun not intended.
I've never noticed that. Aloof Luffy. Oh my god, that's amazing. Sorry, go ahead.
No, but it's like, I didn't, like, it was almost ridiculous. Like, they planned a whole heist, and they planned on him being so aloof and that he worked into the plan. I was like, that's just, and you said that as a regular thing, which is actually weird to me.
It is and it isn't. So it is a regular thing for them to not tell Luffy the plan because he will ruin it. But it's also a thing when they do tell him a plan, he just doesn't go along with it, even either way. Okay. But I thought this was weird, though, because they relied so much on Luffy not going with the plan. Like, there were a lot of, like, things that needed to happen in order for this plan to work. And I thought that was kind of a bit of a stretch.
It was a bit of a stretch. I mean, I'm not mad at it too much. It's just that it didn't... No, none of the other characters won for me. The only guy who actually kind of, I found kind of funny, now that I think about it more, I think his name is Usopp, the guy with the long nose.
Yeah.
And I think he just had a very good moment. Like, it's not so much, because he didn't have a lot of moments in the film either. But when he was fighting the girl who can control luck.
All right.
And he...
The dudes.
Right, the jackpot.
Right. Oh, yeah, the jackpot.
Like, that's...
They put the guys who had bad luck somewhere else, too, I think, next to her.
Oh, yeah. There's that... Yeah, so, like... I have to give that to One Piece more and more. I think about it. It's like, these were some creative ideas for, like, what powers could villains have. Like, to control luck is a really cool one. And they actually look like they came up with different ideas. I mean, even as much as I'm mixed about how the gold was overall, I thought that was really clever of like how like the minute that you walk into the place, the gold is already kind of a trap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. I will say, just going back to the powers, that's another thing I really appreciate about One Piece. As far as world building, and they really make good use of all the powers they have in it. Like, even Robin's power. Like, I remember when I first saw it, I was like, okay, she can make hands grow out of anywhere. But then when you see, like, ways she can use it, like, she can use it to make wings, she can use it to, like, make a huge hand that, like, can stomp you or whatever. It's really clever and well thought out on how they, like, are able to make all these different ways things, these powers can work.
Yeah. It bothered me that the character who had the most interesting thing going on is really not going to be a part of the long-term cast.
Was Karina?
Karina. Like, Karina. She had a good, like, character arc. I mean, I still feel iffy on the fact that essentially at the end, when they were, like, showing the flashback, essentially they just cut off part of the flashback to make her look bad.
Right, yeah. That was odd.
It was odd, but she was charming enough as kind of like stealing from the pirates kind of thing that it worked. Like, you could, the fact that you couldn't tell what side she was going to play, you could have expected her to turn at any moment. The fact that she cared about how she was perceived from Nami, right?
Right.
Like, yep. It was good enough to was like, oh, this character's cool, but it's just like so disheartening. I was like, oh, if I wanted to watch One Piece, the character I liked is not going to be there.
I think if you like her, though, I think you'd like Nami in the long term. But I did think it was odd, because there's no mention of Karina in the anime. And of course, you know, it's non-canon, but it would have been cool to have more of a connection to the anime, where it's like, oh, that person that, like, even if they showed her briefly, it would have been like, oh, this is her. Like, that's what they're talking about.
Right.
I know that you got spoiled on one thing, but do you think it gave you a lot of fan service? Because I know that for a lot of people who I went and watched their reviews of, like, this is, like, such a special thing for them. Of, like, moments they got to see, characters who they got to see return they haven't seen since, like, the first episode or something.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of fan service. Even seeing the guy, and I absolutely hated the character, but... I forgot his name, but he was the main villain in Enies Lobby when Robin gets taken in by basically arrested by the Marines. He's like basically the main guy, like taking her in. And that was just funny because it was like one of the biggest moments of the series, like Luffy going to fight him, going to save Robin, all this stuff. And you get to this movie and then he sees him. He's like, who is he? It's just like only like the one of the, like top five major moments in One Piece.
Wow. Yeah. You would say that for sure? Top five.
I think it's, yeah, top five. Well, I mean, I haven't finished yet, so maybe not, but yeah, I would say top five. I mean, you have a huge thing with Ace, you have Enies Lobby, You have the 2-year thing. I'm not sure what else right now.
Okay.
But yeah, I would say top 5.
So, for you as a One Piece fan, was this movie worth watching? Like,
definitely. It was definitely worth watching. I really enjoyed, because we went to the movie theater to see it, so that was a cool experience in and of itself, just to see an anime movie on the big screen among, like, other fans. But outside of that, no, either way, I think it's definitely worth the watch. It was enjoyable. Like, I laughed. There's, like, I think you mentioned this before, there's every character gets their scene, so if you like a certain character, they each get, like, their own little shine. I don't think you'll love it if you're a One Piece fan. Like, it won't, I don't know if it'll be your favorite, but I think you'll enjoy it. And I think even, like, I don't know, as you, as who haven't really, like, watched it, did you enjoy it? Would you, like, recommend it as a movie for someone to watch who just wants to watch an anime film?
I'm mixed on it. Like, I was a lot more harder on it the minute that we came out of the film. I was like, I'm thinking back on it a little bit more fondly. I just, like, if the humor connected with me, I think I would have liked it a lot more. And I think, depending on, like, what style of humor works for you, if One Piece's humor can catch you, I think you like this movie a lot more than I did.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I guess time switch gears to our other halves.
There's been one song that I've been playing for the last week, in fact probably for the last 2 weeks, and that's a song called Lambo by Swoop. And it's been really, like, heart-punching of, like, transparency. So if I can say the hook correctly, they say, money can't buy happiness, but I wouldn't mind crying in a Lambo. Which I just think is a cool hook in of itself.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like I've heard something similar before, but yeah, go ahead.
Right. I think the thing that makes the song stand out is just really, Swoop has been gone for, what, probably like 2 years. Might be 3 years, actually. Yeah, he's actually been I think it's 2014 is when his last album came out.
Didn't he release a mixtape in the meantime or no?
The mixtape was the same year as the album.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Good.
And
was said last year.
Yeah, it's been a long time. And he kind of lets you in on a lot of stuff that's going on. And more so, I think the thing is that there's this level of honesty that he's been really getting at with the song. There's a line where he says, like, he was talking about being in Baltimore at a homeless shelter. And then right after that is like, how am I supposed to feel when they give me a gospel track? It's like, they gave me a gospel track, but how am I supposed to feel when I gospel rap? Like, feeling that this idea of, like, being in such, like, financial struggles and then being given, like, oh, turn to God and so forth, and he's just like, but that's my entire career though, and he's just kind of struggling with that. And there's another line where he says, like, it'll all work out is what I'm supposed to say, but I'm hurting now, it's just one of those days. Like, he keeps just being like, In the overall end of theme of the song is that he struggles with all of this. He's struggling with where God's placing him and so forth. But he keeps reminding himself, there's this line where he's like, but until God is enough, nothing else will ever be. So it's like, he's a little bit complaining. He's a little frustrated. He has a lot to navigate. But he keeps coming back to, like, what, regardless of all of this, it's, even if I did have the Lambo, I'd still be crying. Like, it still goes back to that hook again. So even though he would say, like, no, money can't buy happiness, I'd rather cry in a Lambo, crying in the Lambo still is not going to help him feel better.
Yeah.
So.
Right. That's deep. That's cool.
So yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, I'm hoping this album turns out great. It's a great single. Great opening single.
When's it supposed to come out?
He hasn't said the date yet, but he better do that soon. Yeah, the video's out. I mean, between him and Jay Givens, I'm like, and Odyssey. Although hip hop has started off slow for me, it looks like it'll pick up soon.
Yeah. That's always good to hear. But in the meantime, a few documentaries out. I finally got to watch Stretch and Bobito, which was awesome. Kind of sad because I didn't realize how much, like, this large part of hip-hop history that I kind of didn't know a lot about of. It was just, like, really cool, like, seeing, like, it's basically, like, it's a college radio show. It kind of reminded me of WCCR, actually. There's, like, a bunch of, like, two guys doing it for fun. Just, like, a really, like, fun-loving community getting together. But just, like, having these rappers come in who would eventually become major stars. Like, yeah, Nas, Biggie, Big L, Jay-Z, Fat Joe. Like, a lot of these rappers got their first ever debut on anything on this radio station. And some of them even got, I think, Old Dirty Bastard, he got his record label signing through that because some guy was listening to the station and was like, oh, I want to sign that dude. So it was just a cool thing, like, just to think of how influential they became. And I think one of the biggest things that stuck out to me as I was watching it, someone mentioned that they were kind of the gatekeepers. I think it was Jay-Z, actually. Maybe it wasn't Jay-Z. I don't know. They were the gatekeepers. It could have been Nas. And that we don't really have a gatekeeper for that anymore. Because they would, like, basically find, like, these guys would send in demos, or they would send in, or they would, you know, hear about somebody, you know, on the streets, and, you know, like, this guy was, like, building up their name. They're like, okay, we're going to get him on the show. And then from that, it was like, okay, you were on Stretch and Bobito, like, you made it to, like, level one, you know? Like, you made it past that level, almost. Like, you did it. And we don't really have that anymore. I don't think there's anything where a rapper can say, like, oh, like, once I do this, like, I've been, like, I'm officially good. Like, I'm officially accepted. I'm officially, like, on to it. And I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, because, like, as much as it would be nice to have something, like, a kind of, like, pathway or rites of passage for rappers to go through, to be like, all right, you go through this, you go through that, like, you get the respect, and then you go there. It's also a little bit, like, it's a little more freeing the other way around now that we have it now, where, like, anyone can put up something online, and, you know, if people like it, you get a lot of attraction, and if they don't, or if they don't hear it, then they don't hear it, and it's just a free-for-all, more or less, because then we get rappers come out like Chance the Rapper, who hasn't been signed, but he's kind of, like, made his name throughout the years and built up his own credibility, and I don't know, a lot of people like that, where, and, like, even, like, you mentioned Swoop before, like, who knows if he would have ever got that shot, especially, like, this was a New York-based radios. I mean, anyone who's not in New York or in that area, they may not have been able to get that chance either. So I don't know if having gatekeepers are good or not, but I think it was definitely, like, a nice slice into, like, 90s hip-hop thing. And the other thing they mentioned too was, like, in the 90s were so, like, special in that it was, they said the 80s was, like, this time of discovery, an introduction to, like, hip-hop. And then the 2000s became, like, commercialization and globalization. The 90s were kind of, like, the transition period. We're like, all right, we're still, like, kind of discovering and moving towards globalization and commercialism, but kind of getting the best of both worlds. And I don't know, really good music in between.
That's a lot to unpack.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty long documentary, but it was great. It was so good. And there's so many good freestyles in there too. Like Big L had some dope freestyles. I wish I remember them enough to recite them. I should have wrote them down. I had one good one that was good. I forgot.
And just a quick two things I want to make clear to the viewers. Hmm. You said WCCR. Most don't know what WCCR is.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
WCCR.
Just know, I think everyone knows what WCCR is. So WCCR is the college radio station where Marcus and I actually met. And yeah, it's a radio station over at City College of New York. 590 AM. So tune in if you ever want to. There's a lot of cool people over there. Nice collective of creative individuals who are doing many, many awesome things.
Yeah, so I wanted to do that. I think, the minute you say that, I think that college radio station community, I can see how that would, like, really hit you the way it does.
Right.
And I can imagine that. Probably makes it more of a big thing for me to watch. Yeah. And the minute you said gatekeepers, it wasn't that gatekeepers that hit me. It's like, there's no rites of passage for hip-hop anymore. And I think, because I know that for a lot of people who talk about, like, the source and the, I think it's, like, the quotable page.
Right, the mics.
And then there's the five mics. Mm-hmm. Like, there is no equivalent to, like, oh, I made it in the, not in terms of, like, quality-wise.
Right. But, like, acceptance-wise, or, like, respect-wise.
Right, I think the closest you may get, and I don't think people look at it this way, but I look at it this way from an outsider's perspective, maybe, is if you get asked to do the, what is it called? It's for producers, Rhythm Roulette. If you get asked to do Rhythm Roulette on Mass Appeal's YouTube page, I think that's like a sign of quality as a producer.
I could see,
like,
yeah.
I think that's the closest thing that we have.
Right. Yeah. I would agree. But nothing for rappers, really.
No. Okay. I don't think we have that anymore.
I don't think so either. It's funny, I've been trying to think of, like, what could be that, but I don't even know. Like, I think the internet just, I don't know. And I don't know if it's a good or bad thing. Like, it is good, but it's also, I don't know, puts us in a box, too. Yeah, see, and that was the other thing, like, these guys are doing, that was a crazy thing, too, because they were doing it, Stretch and Bobito, doing it for free, or for little money. And a lot of times they said they were actually, like, putting out money, but then, like, seeing these rappers go on and be, like, multi-millionaires that, and they first got their shot on their show. It's, like, a really crazy, like, juxtaposition. Like, imagine how that feels. But at the same time, like, I'm sure it's, like, pride and, but a mix of, like, damn, what about me? But.
You wanna, it's funny because you say all of that and the minute you start talking about funds and so forth, for some strange reason, all I can think of is the same thing that we heard in the documentary with Organized Noise about how issues of needing more money and all that carries different weight.
That's so true, yeah, because they made a lot of superstars do, you know, Outkast and CeeLo, and yeah, same.
I think that's what happens when you're like an early hip hop pioneer. You don't get the due.
No, not at all.
And I think that's the disheartening thing. So, but it's moments like that. It's like, wow, I'm glad these documentaries exist.
Yeah, it's been a nice peek into, like, things that were happening that we might not ever know if we weren't there.
Right. Without going crazy into the piece, I think that whole, if we weren't there, probably means more that you say it. Now, in light of conversations that we've had, shout out to Dart Adams and his awesome writing piece. But I think he's documenting. I think, like, documentaries like that really give insight to people like you and I who even really actually do care about hip-hop. Like, we care about learning about this stuff. That it really does.
Right.
It's nice to have, like, pieces of work that from people who were there to provide context for us.
Definitely, definitely. And Sigdal is, you know, firsthand also. That's really cool. But something else we did while I was in Baltimore.
Yes, I showed you.
We watched another movie together.
Yes, I got to show you what I thought was amazing, The Prestige.
It was amazing. Oh my god, that movie blew my mind.
And you might be...
So basically,
Go ahead.
I was going to give a quick little thing. The Prestige is about two magicians who are competing with each other. They both kind of have tricks that the other one can't figure out. It's with Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale. I know that may or may not sound interesting to you, but I promise, watch it. It will blow your mind. It's amazing.
And you might be wondering, why are we discussing this in the hip-hop section? How does this fit in? And...
So...
Years ago, Jay Electronica released Act One, The Pledge, one of his most, like, it is the song for Jay Electronica fans when they talk about, like, three different parts, rapping over the piece of Eternal Sunshine to Spotless Mind, there's so many elements in there. And the thing is that, the idea of Act One, The Pledge, is a reference to The Prestige. And his notoriously rumored album, Act Two, The Patents of Nobility, The Turn, is also a reference to Prestige, which has led to a lot of debate and kind of like, what does this all mean? And I want you to give them the insight of like, what is Act One, Act Two, and Act Three, according to The Prestige?
So, according to the film, Act One is basically present something out, like, let's say a bird, like, bird in a cage. Act Two is make it go away. So, you know, you hide the bird, whatever, and, you know, magician does whatever that makes the bird disappear. And third act is the reveal, which the bird comes back, and magic trick is done. So, essentially, like, trick isn't done until you can make the bird come back. Like, that's the biggest thing.
Right. And there are a lot more nuances in there, which we might pick out, but I think the most, like, Jay Electronica analogy here is that Jay Electronica gave us a great project, and then now we've been waiting for him to return. We've been waiting for his prestige, that third act.
Mm-hmm.
And it is quite fitting that there are rumors of an Act 2 album, and it's never shown up, because the whole Act 2 is supposed to be the disappearance act. And he's made references to this before. If you heard, I think 2 years ago, he released Better in Tune with the Infinite, and there's this quote at the beginning talking about how a person has to be away from the people. And... one of the reason why that's important is that Jay, in the movie, one of the magicians talks about how much you have to commit to your act. How much do you have to sacrifice to be able to deliver on the act? And that has a certain, like, major meaning in the end, but there's this moment early in the film where they're looking at a Chinese magician, and they're trying to figure out what's going on, how is he pulling off the magic trick. And essentially, one of the magicians figures out is like, everything he does is an act, in terms of acting as if he can't walk. And he has to keep up those appearances throughout. Like, he can't let it go, he has to live throughout that, and essentially talking about the sacrifice and commitment to be able to pull off the trick. And then obviously the question is like, if Jay Electronica is supposed to be disappearing from us for this long, what is going to be the grand reveal? And you have a few ideas with that.
I have so many ideas. So first thing we think maybe he has like a secret track on each best-selling albums of like the past like few years. Like he has a track on To Pimp a Butterfly, Forest Hills, whatever. But speaking of Forest Hills Drive, 2014. My thing is, I'm like, maybe Jay Electronica wrote the album that went double platinum with no features. I'm just saying. It went double platinum with no features. So maybe it was Jay Electronica this whole time. J. Cole? No. Jay Electronica. Pun intended.
And the reason why we're going so extreme of like what this could be is that that's the whole point, is that the reveal is not just supposed to be like, you bring back the bird. Like, there's something drastic about the reveal, especially for what happens in that movie. For Jay Electronica to be making a reference to The Prestige and the reveals that happened in The Prestige are both, it's twofold. It's kind of common. It was actually always in your face, which is why it's like, it has to be something that we've been looking at. It has to be something we already know of. Because the whole idea is that he always There's a point in the movie where they keep asking, are you looking closely? That's the question that they ask. Mm-hmm. And the argument is always made is that people don't want to look closely. They want to be surprised. But the truth is always staring at you in the face. And that's true for the movie. So the question is that although we think the reveal should be big, it has to be something staring at you in the face the entire time.
So another theory, he secretly wrote To Pimp a Butterfly. I don't know.
I definitely don't think it's that one, because that would not explain the beef between him and Absol at all.
Maybe that's why. Maybe he finally wants his credit and they won't give it to him. No, I don't know. I have no idea.
I don't know, like, I believe that it could be as simple as you said, like, what if someone, maybe his album is already out on Tidal and we just don't know what it's called, but it's literally there.
No one subscribed. No one subscribed to Tidal. Now we'll never get a Jay Electronica album because no one's looking for it.
Right. And
everyone just does the 3-month trial and then unsubscribes.
And I think, and the reason why I don't think we're as overthinking this either, is that Mos Def has made the same reference about what Jay Electronica is doing. So Jay Electronica gave you like a sample of what he was trying to do. He has Act A, the track. He has Exhibit A and Exhibit C. There is no Exhibit B.
Right.
There was a remix of Exhibit A with Mos Def, and they kept on asking Mos Def, oh, is this Exhibit B? Is this Exhibit B? It's like, Mos Def was like, no, the whole point is that there is no Exhibit B.
Right. So, it's the same thing as, there is no Act 2. It's Act 1 and Act 3.
Right. And I'm really curious to know what Act 3 has been, if we already have it in our lives, or what it will be. Do you have any other guesses that you want to throw out to the people? So when this ever happens, you could be like, on Nerds and Hip Hop, in January 2017, Miss Old School predicted it.
Oh, do I have any more predictions? Let's see. Maybe they're, like, hidden on, like, Batman The Returns. Not Batman Returns. The Christopher Nolan in X-Men movies with Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale. Maybe that's it. Maybe there's a track on each of those movies. The trilogies. Or, I don't know, is X-Men... How many X-Men are there? Maybe he's doing the soundtrack to Logan. I don't know. I have no idea. It's a thing. That's the crazy thing. Like, it's probably, like, staring at you in plain sight, and you're gonna feel dumb when you don't realize it, but at the same time, it's like... It's almost no way for you to know, it feels like. But there's every way for you to know, so.
And the thing is that, I don't know how else can we watch Jay Electronica closer. Because I'd be like, when you're watching The Prestige, it's not surprising what the reveal is. Like, I, by the time I was like, okay, it has to do with that thing. You didn't catch that, but it didn't seem like, the minute you look at the film again, it was, it's so clear.
So clear. Even when you said earlier in this, when you're like, something about the end, I was like, wait, no, they're kind of figuring out. I'm like, no, probably, you, if you haven't seen, you probably won't, like. You can make so many allusions to it, I think, and you still might not get it. Just because, I don't know, it's so out there, almost. Almost.
Right. You want to be surprised.
Right, that too.
It goes back to that.
Yep.
So.
So yeah, so those are our theories. If you have any theories, let us know. Hashtag nerds on hip hop.
We need more theories.
We need more theories. And maybe you'll be the one where you're like, I said this in this month in 2017. And I don't know what you'll get, but it'll be awesome. You to be able to say that to people.
Exactly. So let's go straight into our theme of the week.
Yes. Our theme this time is loyalty.
Yeah, and I don't have the original context of why I thought loyalty would be interesting.
Me neither.
I had, I'm sure we had good reasons at one point in time.
Most likely. Sure. we just pick them at random.
I don't think
we like a spinny wheel.
I feel like this is an episode of Animaniacs. Wheel of Morality. Turn, turn, turn. Tell us a lesson that we should learn.
Exactly. Loyalty. All right.
So, in nerddom, the first thing that comes to mind when I think of, like, loyalty, and I think part of the reason why I did think about it was when I took my trip to New York City, I felt so much kind of support again, and I think that's just been kind of back in my mind of, like, people who I'm around and who support and value you. And I think in nerddom, the best example I can think of is Toradora. There is so many moments in Toradora where people are not serving themselves. So, without going crazy into spoilers, because it's not that heavy, but part of Toradora starts off with that two people want to help each other end up in relationships with each of their close friends. So, Ryuji is trying to help Taiga end up with his friend, and then Taiga's trying to help Ryuji end up with her friend, Minarin. And then what ends up happening is that Taiga and Ryuji start falling for one another. But in the middle of all of that, they're kind of resisting. And part of it they're resisting is just like they're resisting their emotions. But part of the resisting is that they're committed to helping the other person. They're committed to wanting to see so Taiga wants to see Ryuji with Minarin, like, and that's her goal. That's what she really wants to see, and she's willing to kind of put herself second. And I think there's like such a heavy emotional scene when you kind of start figuring out what type of things Taiga has done to make sure that would happen, or try her best to make that happen. And it's the most loyal thing I can think of like, I know I want this. I know I'm interested in this person, whatever, but I rather see you win because I care about you more than I care about myself.
Huh. I don't know why. It kind of reminds me of this Chinese movie, In the Mood for Love. I'm almost positive I told you about it a million times already. And
this will be a million and one.
This will be a million and one. Where it's about two spouses who figure out that their spouses are cheating on them with each other. So, like, a husband and a wife figure out that their wife and husband are cheating on them with each other. That makes any sense. So after these two neighbors figure this out that their spouses are cheating on them, with each other, they kind of start hanging out and kind of like, what should we do when they get back from like their vacation that they're on or from their business trip? And through this, they start to fall for each other, but they also, I don't know if, I guess like, it was not technically loyalty, but it's more like, I don't want to be like them. So they kind of fight these feelings, even though they want to be together. Because they're like, I don't want to be a cheater also. I don't know, so I don't know why it felt, I guess like fighting the feelings for like a cause was kind of made me think of a connection. But that's not my nerddom one.
What's all the nerddom one you actually came up with?
Nerddom one that I came up with was Simone and Kamina. Like, Simone was so loyal to Kamina, I thought, like, to a point where, like, he followed him, like, you know, up out of the earth, literally. And even, you know, spoiler alert, after Kamina dies,
Episode six.
He, way in the beginning, he still, like, takes on Kamina's dream and makes it his own dream, or, you know, keeps it as his own dream as well, and keeps pushing forward and kind of carries Kamina with him throughout this whole series, even to the end where they end up building a statue of him, of Kamina, in their, you know, new land. But, so I think that was just, like, a really big example of loyalty to me, where you see, this kid basically following his brother or brother figure to the ends of the earth and beyond, based on, you know, just pure faith and loyalty. Well, that was pretty cool. That's it.
The minute you say brother, I want to bring it straight into the theme and the same loyalty in hip hop. I think of the classic J-Line as like, when I say a big verse, I'm only bigging up my brother. I'm big enough to do it and that thorough. Plus, I also know my own flow is foolish. And that whole verse about, like, why does he do so many Biggie references? That quote in response to either, I think it's Cameron or Nas who ended up doing the remix of, like, I'm not a writer, I'm a, like, the original line is like, I'm not a biter, I'm a writer for myself and others. And then somebody else remixed it and ended up saying, I'm not a writer, I'm a biter. And then they played all of, like, Jay-Z quoting Biggie's lines. It was either Cameron or Nas. And it goes back to the idea of, like, why would Jay-Z do that? Like, and especially if some of these songs he's not giving Biggie credit directly. And I always thought that it was interesting because you can tell that the reason why Jay does it is to keep Biggie's legacy in rotation. Like, he doesn't just say it because Jay's lazy. He says it because he cares sincerely about keeping Biggie's legacy in rotation. In a certain sense, he understands that his legacy is Biggie's legacy. Like, you can get the sense that's what he's communicating when he says that. When I say a big verse, I'm not only bigging up my brother, I'm bigging up like, all of that seems very implied in that line. I think, in a certain sense, I can't believe I'm saying the sentence, Jay-Z was loyal. There's a whole lot of context behind that, so why that's a surprising thing for me to say, but yes.
In short, he doesn't like Jay-Z.
That's not true anymore, okay?
Oh, alright.
I told you that.
New developments.
I reluctantly like Jay-Z. I reluctantly like Jay-Z. That's where I'm at.
Alternative facts. But yeah.
Mine is semi-connected, because the first thing I thought of, I think I saw yours and it made me think of this, was Kanye and Jay-Z, Kanye's big brother. And he alludes to Jay-Z's relationship with Biggie, where he's like, my big brother was Big's brother. So here's a few words from your kid brother. And I just thought it was like a really, I mean, in light, you know, despite what they're going through now, it was a really cool way to kind of show your affinity for someone and kind of your love for someone and appreciation for someone. Because basically the whole song is basically how much he admires and cares for and appreciates Jay-Z. Like he even says, like, if you admire somebody, you should go on ahead and tell them. You know, people never get the flowers while they can still smell them. And he talks about, he's like, an idol in my eyes, god of the game, all these things. And I just, it's a really cool track, I think, for someone to do for someone they admire that's still alive.
Right. And it was cool that he didn't just paint it as if he was old, that they're always great. Like, we say now that, like, Kanye and Jay got beef, but it's like, they've always, like, part of the whole brotherly thing has been the brotherly tension. He talks about, like, first I did a song with Coldplay, when I hear that you did a song with Coldplay, I'm like, oh, no way, like, stuff like that. Then you told Jay Brown, then I had to go get my, like, he had to go get his own tickets for the Black album concert. Like, there are things that he was describing that he's salty, but I think he aired them out because he wanted to be honest about how he felt and how much he did appreciate in light of everything.
Right. And even, like, later on in Diamonds from Sierra Leone, like, he kind of goes into that, like, you know, what's up with you and Jay, man? Are you okay, man? And then Jay comes in, like, yep, and does his, you know, freestyle remix verse. And just, like, little moments like that, like...
Even though that's before this, though.
Oh, you're right. You're right. I don't know what I was thinking before.
But, there. I mean, the same thing about attention would still be there.
Right. Yeah, so they're up and down all the time, but... I thought it was a really cool, like, song that shows loyalty in hip-hop. That's dope stuff. Which leads us to our what question. What is the best example of loyalty or disloyalty that you've seen in your life? So, what is it?
I think the... One of the best examples of loyalty I can think of actually goes out to a friend of the podcast, The Control Freak. And we're going to do a WCCR story again. So I think it's good that we finally explained what it was. When I was a part of my college radio station, after my first year, they were going to ask me to be vice president. That's something that they were trying to prepare me to be. And the control freak pretty much called me the day before they offered me the position, essentially, or were telling me about the position. And he was like, don't do it. And for most people, they'd be like, how is that an example of loyalty? What do you mean? But I love WCCR, but WCCR is also kind of notorious for, like, being a black hole of people's lives.
It's a time suck. Like, go there and you lose hours and hours. It's fun, but you lose hours and hours of your day. And, yeah, it's hard to get things done.
It's hard to
be productive.
It's hard to get things done. And in my particular case, I was in the honors program. And pretty much... The control freak looked at me and was like, look, you got to finish your thing on time. You can't afford to do this now. And you're like, they're not ready in terms of, like, where CCR was at that time. But, like, this is not what you need. And he really looked out for me in the sense of, like, and he was right. Like, that, as much as I would have wanted to have done something like that, the timing wasn't right for me. And in terms of the stuff I needed to get done, I couldn't afford this to be a bigger black hole for me. And I always appreciated that, as I said, he called me the day before. He was like, I want to make sure that that you're good and that we have this conversation and that you look at the bigger picture. And I think that was like the sign of, like, we were already close friends at that point, but I think that's the moment of, like, when, how deep this friendship was going to go for both of us.
Mm-hmm. That's nice. That's cool. Yeah, like I said, you looked out. Yes.
Yes. What about for you? What's the biggest example of disloyalty or loyalty?
I'm going with loyalty as well. Focus on the positive. My parents. It's cliche, I guess, a little bit, but I'm very grateful and thankful to have really good parents that are super loyal. My mom specifically, super loyal to her kids, like, including me. Yeah, I have three brothers also, where she just always, like, puts us first, like, rarely ever questions whether we're in the right or wrong. Like, she just always is in our corner. One specific,
Nothing, I didn't say it. You've always been in the wrong.
I am never in the wrong. But no, one specific story, since we're doing story time, I wore a skirt that may or may not have been too short to in middle school, but it was within dress code. And then I wore a shirt that it was white with blue stripes, but blue wasn't a color we could wear on our tops. So this teacher called me out on it, and I got detention for the first time in my life. I was in 7th grade. So I went home, told my mom, I got detention. And she just was like, what? That makes no sense. Like, never got detention before in my life. Always got good grades, whatever. So she was like, show me what outfit you wore. So I showed her the outfit. Thought about lying, but I didn't. Glad I didn't. And she, like, I think... No, I really didn't. And within that week, she brought... Her and my dad brought the outfit I wore to school, had a conference with my teacher and I think the principal, and was like, why is she getting detention? What is up with this? And essentially got me removed from that teacher's class, which was a thing too. And yeah, just like things like that. Like, she just really, like, came for me, like her and my dad. And my dad's really good at communication as well. Like, he just always makes sure to stay in touch, and just, like, I travel a lot, so, but he's always, like, texting or calling or making sure I'm okay. Yes, yeah, so I'm really lucky to have great parents, I would say. And that's that.
And I think that's going to wrap it up on such an extra positive note.
Yay! There's such a PSA episode this time around.
I think
that started out with a little political thing. I was talking about good ethics.
What is going on with this? So, typically, we'd have fan answers here, but we didn't get fan answers to the last question, but maybe you have a story about loyalty in your life, or maybe you can think of, like, a loyalty in a hip hop song or loyalty in nerddom for you. Let us know. And or disloyalty.
Disloyalty.
I mean, you could talk about how Victoria falls asleep in conversations as an example of being disloyal. But I'm not going to bring that up.
Rarely.
Anyways, if you do have examples, send us tweets using the hashtag #NerdsOnHipHop. Or hashtag AskNOHH, or email us at nerdsandhiphop.com. Thanks for listening to us. Wait, what did I forget?
At Gmail. nerdsonhiphop@gmail.com.
Okay. I'm not sure what I forgot, but thank you.
No problem.
Thanks for listening to Nerds on Hip Hop. Once again, I'm the Wolves Den, and I'm here with the greatest...
Victoria, aka Miss Old School. And if you want to reach us on social media, I'm at Miss Old School, Old School with a K, because it's the best kind of school. And where can they reach you at?
The Wolves Den 25.
And that's on every social media platform. So make sure, answer our question, let us know any disloyal or loyal stories you have, whether in your personal life, nerddom, or hip hop. And we'll be hearing from you.
Catch you later. Sayonara, son.
Bye.